FM, Eye on Terrorism, exclusively on Chai FM.
David Harris, good morning. Shavua Tov. Sorry to keep you waiting. How are you?
That's absolutely fine. Good morning, and lovely to hear you back in the mornings.
It really is great to be here. So, as you know, we are having some of our own issues here in South Africa with governments behaving badly, with anti-Semitism on the rise. We also have two Lebanese nationals in court today for supplying drone equipment to Hezbollah.
Yeah, it's an incredible story. It takes in multiple countries, Japan, Australia, the United States, South Africa, and more. I dare say there was some intelligence work involved as well on the Israeli part. It just proves that terror in all of its forms can strike anywhere. I mean, you obviously have also had the possible reports of the couple being kidnapped and maybe killed.
David, what do you make of that story? It just seems to be a strange one to me, that kidnapping story. Have you followed it closely?
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think it's a bit strange. And quite often when I'm on this program, the number 6,000 South Africans going off to fight for ISIS is quoted at me. And I think it is so far exaggerated, thankfully for the people of South Africa, that there isn't a major problem. That having been said, given South Africa's track record on being soft on terror, the fact that it's over the years hosted various terrorist organizations, if another terrorist organization perceives a place like South Africa as being soft, then it is perfectly understandable that A, it becomes a target, and B, it just becomes a base for sleeper cells. And that is not beyond the realms of the possibility. Now, I'm not au fait with the intimate details of this story. And as you say, it certainly sounds strange, but if it has done nothing other than to raise awareness of the possibility of domestic terror threats in South Africa, then it's been a good thing.
I hear that. Truthfully, I don't think it has done much to raise awareness, because although that said, it was the cover story on the Star newspaper, which is a daily newspaper here in Johannesburg, and it was covered as the main story in the Saturday Star. So it certainly is out there, but it's just a bit of a perplexing one in my view. That said, this issue of the Hezbollah case, where you have two Lebanese nationals living in South Africa, supposedly importing parts for drones, but in fact just simply transshipping them to Hezbollah, that is obviously very, very concerning. Are we seeing globally that there is that this net is tightening for terrorists who are looking to supply arms and other equipment to terror organizations?
First of all, we've got to accept the fact that business is business, and that's the bottom line. And very often people who are supplying weapons to terrorists really couldn't care less about the rationale behind any individual terror group, and that's certainly been the case historically if you look back to the 60s and 70s. That having been said, the question is, how much can you do? You know, you're a South African, you find a contact in Germany, you meet in a place like Aruba or Cyprus, which was traditionally a case for such things. Deals are done, contracts are signed, bank accounts are open in questionable countries. It's extremely difficult to track this sort of thing down. And I have to say, the one organization that doesn't get enough credit for this type of work is the Treasury in the United States. They have departments dealing with the transfer of finances, trying to stop the terrorists. They do tremendous work. They've brought about numerous arrests. They've broken up numerous cycles. They've been responsible for imposing all sorts of sanctions on individuals, on groups, and on countries. And they just don't get a mention. For every success, I imagine there are 10 failures at least. I mean, how do you explain the weaponry that got to ISIS, for example? And we know that much of that weaponry came from Western sources, even including Israel. You know, they've waved about Israeli weapons. There is a big trade, an illicit trade to terrorists, and it's extraordinarily difficult to cut it.
David, how much, you know, we read a lot of reports about ISIS. We read a lot of reports about the fact that they are significantly weakened, that they've lost most areas in the caliphate. In fact, they've moved possibly to North Africa. How much of a threat does ISIS remain today?
My answer to this question is always, bottom line, it doesn't matter if there are 1,000 ISIS members or one ISIS member in your country, in your region. It takes one deranged, crazy ISIS person to carry out a terror attack, mm-hmm. to create absolute havoc, to destroy, you know, a city, make stock markets plunge and so on. That having been said, sure, ISIS is weakened at its heart, but as you pointed out, North Africa is that they have serious numbers of people all over. In Afghanistan, they are growing. They are still in the Philippines, despite Duterte's attempt to wipe them out. We know of cells of ISIS really across the globe. Then, of course, there are people who have been radicalized online through ISIS propaganda and so on. Their numbers are incalculable. And, you know, this week alone, in the last 7 days, in the United States, there have been numerous cases of individuals either pleading guilty or being sentenced for terror attacks in the name of ISIS. So they're reaching far and wide. And I imagine, tragically, that in the UK, Germany, France, Holland, Belgium, we will see a major terror attack in the name of ISIS during the course of 2018, with many, many people being killed. And it's a terrible thing to say, but it's just impossible to track these people once they've left the caliphate. And one more thing, in the caliphate, of course, it's much more containable because they're in Iraq, they're in Syria, you know where they are and how to deal with them, or how to at least contain the terror to those places. Once these people leave, you know, there's no knowing where they're going to show up, including the possibility of cell in South Africa, even if we think that this one might not be the case.
Yeah, in fact, I see that there's a tendency among South Africans to what I think is delude themselves, to say, well, you know, if it's almost a safe haven, in inverted commas, that, you know, there's possible training camps, which have never really been proven unequivocally. We know that there are recruitment areas. We do know that the South African passport has been used in the odd occasion. We do know that the White Widow, who is responsible for Kenya, came through South Africa. We know, you know, so we know that South Africa yep. is some form of either transit point, procurement point. We do know this. But South Africans almost seem to delude themselves to say, well, you know, there's not going to be an attack here, because that wouldn't make sense. It doesn't further the goals of the organization. What is your response to that?
So you take a country like Algeria or a country like Tunisia, which have provided some of the largest numbers of recruits to ISIS, and yet you look back in those countries, and there have been ISIS terror attacks there as well.